Hello and welcome to The Bunker. I'm Hannah Fern. Given the omnishambles that is the levelling up agenda, you could be forgiven for thinking that the government really doesn't give a monkey's about local communities and the principles of localism. But ye of short memories, cast your minds back. Only a decade ago, when George Osborne was Chancellor, the Conservatives offered new powers to local councils over matters including housing and transport in return for them electing their own metro mayors. And there are 24 directly elected mayors in England. I'm joined today by the most well-known and influential Tory, Andy Street, who is Mayor of the West Midlands Combined Authority. Hi, Andy.
Hannah, hi. Great to be here with you.
So you were first elected in May 2017.
Correct.
And that result, I suppose retrospectively, was one that some labelled as an early sign that the Red Wall was crumbling. Were you surprised to win on that day?
On the day, no. We knew on the polling day that it was going to be neck and neck. And of course, I won by a tiny
yes,
number,
yeah.
4,000 in 2 million votes, or 2 million voters. But if you take a little longer term, 6 months, yes, I was surprised. Everyone said when I chucked in journalists to stand for this job that there's no chance, Andy, you're mad. Why on earth are you giving up a good job? But I just had this sneaking feeling we could do it. Because to your point about the Red Wall, the signs had been there about the Red Wall in the West Midlands probably right back to 2005. The direction of travel had been clear and we were improving our overall electoral position for some time. And then, of course, the massive breakthrough was in 2019. But if you look at the results for a decade, it had been coming.
You were making your case, I guess, and your background in Don Lewis was as a salesman. Tell us a little bit about the start of your
salesman,
career.
Salesman, lovely.
Well, you began,
I was. So my career in John Lewis started as a graduate trainee, and I literally spent the first Christmas on the till at one of our shops in Brent Cross, and I learned how to do it from the bottom up, really. And I'm a huge believer in that, actually. And John Lewis, I have huge admiration for to this day because they believed in developing their own people for their senior leadership jobs in the future. Exactly the same in Waitrose, our sister company, a friend of mine, colleague, worked through the ranks as well. And that was very unfashionable. You know, the idea was you had to go and work for 12 different companies to demonstrate your career path. But John Lewis was exactly the opposite of that. There was something about values, principles that led you to be a suitable leader.
So you came to, I guess, make your case about you as a representative of the West Midlands with that sales background, let's say. What did you feel like you needed to say about yourself to get the people to understand?
I suppose I needed to say this, and this is why I think, and it maybe is a theme we'll pick up, this was a different political job.
Yeah.
This wasn't being a representative of the party in London. This was first and foremost being an individual, one person, single point of accountability, the textbook said, to lead the West Midlands. And that I believed I had built some skills in business that enabled me to do that job. So the idea of building a team, building a strategy, standing accountable for what you were doing, that's exactly what you do as a CEO. So many journalists say to me, politics and business are so different. Actually, I thought in this job, there was far more similarity than difference.
That's interesting. So you talk about how there's this distance between London and Birmingham, and you were going to be located right there. So what makes both that job but also the region different? Why is it different from being an MP? What is it about the region that you really need to represent? When you are lobbying with, you know, literally the cabinet, you're having those
meetings.
Absolutely.
Or international business people who are investing. So I think the big difference is one phrase. It's about place, not party. To whom do I owe my loyalty? I'm not whipped by the Conservative Party. My loyalty is solely to the people of the West Midlands. And on occasions, it will mean that you don't necessarily agree with everything that the government does. I am fiercely proud to be a Conservative, but it does not mean I am bound by what the government say. And that's, I think, the big difference. And if you're elected on a manifesto, standing behind a Prime Minister, as a member of parliament, that's not happened to me. It is different.
I mean, you've definitely lived that value in so much as you've been quite outspoken where you differ.
Yeah.
You recently described the levelling up agenda as a comms cock-up. What did you mean by that?
Very straightforward. Your introduction almost reveals why I said what I did. I can't remember exactly the phrases you used. Just remind me now what you said right at the beginning of the broadcast.
I said that it was an omni-shambles.
So that, there you have it.
And that the government didn't give a monkey's butt.
So the fact that you can say that and people aren't saying what she's on about, that sort of, because the truth is that Michael Gove and his team have invested billions of pounds in addressing the levelling up challenges. But are we getting that message across? No, because we allowed the one thing that was called the Levelling Up Fund to be a tiny, tiny sum of money relative to everything else that's happening. But that carried the name. And as we all know, the allocations of the Levelling Up Fund were at best controversial last time. So that's what I mean by saying we're not getting the advantage of what we're doing. And you do then have to say, how are we not communicating this well enough?
So there's not enough money there.
In the Levelling Up Fund, no, yes. But that's not the way Levelling Up's delivered. It's about how all the other government funding is actually helping in what it does.
And do you believe that anything has happened there that you should be happy about?
Yes, huge amounts.
Right. So what should the government be telling us that we're not hearing?
So they should be telling us that with the mayoral combined authorities, first of all, there have been, in our case, I'll give you our number, £7.4 billion is the additional amount of money that the West Midlands combined authorities brought into the West Midlands since its inception to do levelling up. And we see an improvement in the skills standards in the West Midlands. We see an improvement in doubling of the number of homes being built. We see unprecedented amount of capital investing in transport. No one could possibly question that. But then, do you actually hear that total story from government in a coherent way? Sometimes not. So that's what I meant, that the reality is better than the comms story.
Do you think that the West Midlands has unique challenges that need to be addressed through the funding that you're describing? Or are they the same challenges as faced in the north and so on? Is there something specific that you'd like to see more of?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. One of the things that unites the mayors, actually, sometimes cross-party, but very much because of the job we're doing, is there are a lot of similarities. And actually, if you stand back, the big picture of Britain is London, wonderfully successful international city, and almost every other city region in the UK below average GDP. And that's very different to the situation in France and Germany, in the US. So there is definitely a common factor in this whole levelling up debate. But what there are also is individual situations. And there is definitely an individual situation in the West Midlands. We are the part of the country that still has the highest proportion of its GDP from manufacturing. So inevitably, some of the challenges around energy policy at the moment, around terms of trade changing, they are more acute for us than for others. And if you want to pull out a real specific, the automotive industry been so much in the headlines, hasn't it? I mean, the West Midlands is the capital of the automotive sector for the UK. So we have got a specific piece there. And if you said to me, what's the government got to do to help us more? The whole question about the move to the electrification of the automotive industry is mission critical. And obviously it's great that there is a rumour, not yet confirmed, that there will be good news for that sector coming, because that really, really matters to us.
We hear a lot about the north from the government. You know, there's the Northern Powerhouse, whatever happened to that, but there's a lot of communications about the north. Do you feel like there's a genuine understanding of the identity of the Midlands in Whitehall? Or do you feel like you're fighting against that sometimes?
It's a fair question. So yes, I do sometimes feel that we've got to keep fighting that battle. But in a sense, I said earlier on, I chucked in a job because I wanted to go and do this other one for the West Midlands. I can't have it both ways. If there's a real job to be done there and you need someone to step forward and be that that champion, I can't then sort of complain that the challenge exists. But you are right. It is often easier to talk about the north as the sort of...
it's not necessarily a meaningful phrase.
Exactly. And my goodness, it's not a homogenous place, is it? So, no, exactly. But your point is right. It is more often talked about. But again, look at the evidence. Let's take HS2 as one of the things that is clearly one of the biggest agents of levelling up. The West Midlands part of HS2 is intact. Mm. It is not in the north.
No,
we
right.
understand that. So there is a clear piece of evidence there that the government has consistently backed our vision for HS2 being critical to the West Midlands.
What's your relationship like with Whitehall as a mayor?
That's a very interesting question. I would describe it as pretty positive.
But there's a note of hesitation.
Yeah, I'm going to explain why. I'm going to be very honest with you and explain why. It's very positive. And I said earlier, we've got a lot of money out of Whitehall, if you put it in that very transactional way. I think it's professional. I hope they'd say that we in the combined authority did a pretty good job in putting our cases, but it's immature. And that's the reason for hesitation. And actually at the heart of the devolution deal that we struck with Michael Gove in March, the really important thing was about maturing of the relationship. So I previously said that devolution was sort of incomplete because yes, we'd make our proposals, but Whitehall would decide. And actually what the Devo deal moves to is this idea of a single settlement, single pot, as Michael Heseltine always called it, for the West Midlands and Greater Manchester. And that is a really, really important move. So we take decision-making control. And so what we've got at the moment, hence the word immature, is we've got a sort of staging post to that. But you know what? I do get, we've only been at this for 6 years, remember? 6 years since we were even formed. And so some would say it's quite surprising that in a very short period of time, by historical standards of changing governance structures, we've made all this progress. So I sort of say that's okay as a pace, and we've sort of got to grow with it naturally.
And that's a very optimistic view. And
I am an optimist.
I hope you're right.
Yeah.
But doesn't every government, once it gains power, you hear a lot in manifestos about localism and the importance of local government, the importance of local decision-making. And then when it becomes the government, Whoever is elected becomes centralist.
And there will be some listeners
when you constantly have to fight against that.
And there'll be some of your listeners, he would say that, wouldn't he? He's a Tory guard, he would say that. But you have to say...
Well, I don't think there's any difference, actually, whether you're Conservative or Labour there. That's just
It's just that you're making a point about the nature of a new incoming government controls. And I get that point. But let's just examine the fact, has this government... particularly through Jeremy Hunt, said we are prepared to give away power. £1.5 billion was the value of our deal. They've said there'll be this single pot settlement. That moves us to a sort of Scotland, Wales, Northern Ireland status. That is giving away power. So they've done that. And if I may be slightly provocative, we've now got to see, would any incoming Labour government, should there be one, would they be prepared to honour that? And I sort of think that my party's thrown the gauntlet down and said, we're going to do this, and we need to hear the response from Rachel Reeves.
Metro mayors as a role have been around for a couple of decades now. I know they're maturing in the way you've described, but they have existed for that period of time. But only yourself, and I would say possibly Andy Burnham as well, are the household names.
He definitely is.
You don't think you are?
No, it was a compliment. It's not for me to comment on myself.
But why do you think they've become more visible? Why do we only know of the two of you?
Well, Sadiq Khan as well, obviously, because that's the same model.
That's true.
So the interesting thing is, you said two decades. The only place that's had a mayor for two decades is London. And look how the role, whoever has done the job, whichever party, the role has become more and more entrenched in London, which is a good thing. Whether it be Greater Manchester or the West Midlands, which probably people would say the next two places, that's only been 6 years. So I actually think it's becoming the established pace. And I hope Andy would say the same. It's great to be a trailblazer. Great to sort of be setting the pace. And I hope both of us have done that reasonably well.
So do you expect that there'll be more individuals visible?
Point. Yeah.
We'd be able to talk about...
I do. Yeah. And I think we're emerging. And I actually think that you said in your intro as well, there's 24 directly elected mayors now. There's other places coming forward with their deals. So again, you've got to be realistic about this. The governance of this sophisticated, deeply ancient country doesn't change overnight. But is this model becoming established? I genuinely believe it is. And I believe one of the reasons why a place likes the idea of a champion, their representative that they can relate to and with whom the buck stops.
Isn't that the key thing that you have made yourself, I guess, the person who represents and reflects the character of your area. Perhaps the reason that some of these individuals that we think of, like yourself and Andy Burnham, and indeed in London with Ken Livingstone and Boris Johnson, The reason they were so successful is that they sort of embodied some of the values of their places. And is it about picking the right person to represent the area? If you don't have the right person, then they're not going to be visible in the way that you are.
Spot on. And this is the
so they've got to pick, you've got to pick the right person.
It's got to, it's an individual role. Mm. That's absolutely right. And, you know, I'm not going to be in any way, critical of anywhere else, but the model isn't advancing with the same place in every area. And, the whole question of how it matures in time, it's not just dependent on the individuals, but it's also dependent on how strong the structures are behind them. One of the government reasons the government trusted us with this billions of pounds of money is I've got a board made up of our local council leaders cross-party that clearly can exercise proper decision-making. We've got an executive who can do the proper due diligence and stuff, make sure we don't waste public money. And all of that has to be built over time in this area. But you're
so we should be patient.
You should. And the underlying point is right, though. A place need. I always think when I do interviews for Midlands Today, ITV Central, which is where my residents watch, I think even if they disagree with me, do they think he's doing a fair job as our representative, our leader? Are his person, are his values, his principles, are they things that the average Coventrian, Brummy, Wolfrunian, whatever they are, sitting at home think, yeah, that's okay. He's all right to represent me. And that value set thing really matters to me.
Okay. So, super councils, which are obviously an important part of, you know, this kind of expansion of localism and powers of local government, they are touted as the future of local democracy. And your own West Midlands Combined Authority is very big, and it's expanding further. How big should it get?
Just let me correct you. There is no agreement yet for it to expand. Okay, there are all sorts of rumours, but there is no...
Can you give us a hint on
no,
whether
I can't,
those
because, no, it's very simple. No council has formally applied to join yet. If they do, I would welcome it. It'd be clear about that, but there is no process at the moment. How big they should get? There isn't a 5 million people, X square metres answer to that. Because it's about what is the natural economic geography.
Also is it the emotional geography as well?
Exactly
should
so.
Should it be Shropshire? Should it be Crewe? How far is it?
What do you feel part of? I don't think Crewe, which is in Cheshire, if my geography is right. I don't think many people in Cheshire say they're part of the West Midlands.
No, they don't. But it's still, it's close enough that arguably you could
I
make
think that's
case.
I think that's an extended case. But you are right that the reason we started as we did was there was definitely an economic coherence. You know, transport doesn't stop at the end of Birmingham. Skills training doesn't stop at the end of Wolverhampton, da-da-da. It works in a bigger picture. And yes, potentially that could grow, but it has to have that economic coherence. That's, you're right, that emotional coherence, social coherence. You can't just draw a random line. It's got to feel like something we're part of. And I do think the questions connect, actually. That's why it seems to be working for us, that there is that sort of, that connection, sense of belonging to it.
Isn't, just to argue on the contrary, such expansion that is touted, rumoured, whatever. Isn't it in direct conflict with the spirit of localism?
No, there's a really important point here. Because you describe this as super council, and I didn't interrupt, but I don't think that's actually the helpful description, because we are not trying to do what a council does. And the reason it's not in conflict is you devolve from London to the regional authority, things that are best done at regional level. Transport planning is obviously the best. Everyone just thinks, that makes total sense. Yeah. As one train company for the West Midlands, and that doesn't stop, as I say, at the end of Solihull. But you do not take the things up that the council does currently. Indeed, potentially you push even more down to council, and even more below council level could be parish level. So the whole principle of devolution can be done at different levels.
Okay.
Absolutely. It's super council. That's the wrong psychology around it.
Let's move back to the kind of nitty gritty of politics at the moment. So in 2021, there were a lot of eyes on you to see if the new blue wall, as we call it now sometimes, was holding. And obviously you were re-elected.
Yeah.
What do you make of the strength of the Conservative vote in your area now?
Encouraging. And you may be surprised. Your face is telling me surprise. But let me just tell you the facts. And there's no reason why you should necessarily have picked this up, because we are Midlands is quite modest, and so the party's achievement in the West Midlands recently has been very interesting. We did not, just put it this way, it'll click immediately. Local elections recently, we did not lose a single council seat in the West Midlands Combined Authority, net-net. And the three urban Conservative councils, Walsall, Dudley, Solihull, were all returned with substantial majorities. So there is something, because you asked me the question about my region, there is something in the success of the party in the West Midlands that is of significance. And I put it down to practical delivery on the ground in those authorities.
So that's incredibly encouraging for you and your party in your area. How far do you, with that success locally, feel represented by your party in Westminster now? Because you have been very critical of some individuals. Recently you spoke out about Suella Braverman and the speeding fine debacle.
I made a general point. I didn't talk about her fine particularly. But let's answer your question. So I'm sure this would ever be the case. Of course, there are some people in the government you naturally warm to as individually more than others. Of course, there are people who are much more my type of Conservative. If you did that in that philosophical sense, Jeremy Hunt would be my most natural ally. He was the person I backed for leader first round last summer. But let's be absolutely clear. I am 100% behind Rishi Sunak and the current government believe that my experience in the West Midlands about a moderate, inclusive, tolerant Conservative brand that gets on and delivers in tough places, there is a message for the National Party there, and it chimes with Rishi's very clear focus on delivery.
Are there any individuals that you think he will be wise to?
Oh, I'm not going to answer that question. That's not for me to answer, of course.
We can draw your own conclusions, listeners, by having a look at some of the comments that Andy has made. Around some of the practical policy areas that the government's tackling at the moment, you criticised energy companies directly for their failure to do more on the cost of living.
Yeah.
Would you like to see more interventionism from the government on cost of living?
Well, let's talk about energy, because there's this is a very, very live issue still. And everyone always says the government must, but it's more complicated than that, actually, because let's just explain what the issue is. Wholesale prices of energy are falling, great, but if you signed a deal last autumn, you are still paying those very inflated prices, probably five times what you were paying before the energy crisis court came. And of course, the government support has now fallen away. So they are left beached. And there are, and the reason why this is so important to me, if you think about the structure of our economy, very dependent on energy in our manufacturing sector. So it really, really matters to those SMEs across the Black Country. So the issue is, are the energy companies going to release these customers from these punitive deals? And if the energy companies will not, what is the regulator going to do? And if the regulator won't act, what is the government going to do? And we're at a very intense period of discussions with companies and currently on that very issue, because it has not gone away.
You obviously feel like leadership is very important there, and you're putting your stand out there in terms of what your position. You've talked about your local success as a party, but obviously the poll lag does remain government nationally.
No, we're not being naive about that.
When we come to next year's general election, do you and later, you know, and the elections of metro mayors as well, do you think that you will suffer from the Conservatives' unpopularity for reasons that have nothing to do with the work that you've described?
Of course, that you bear the result will be somewhat influenced by the brand of the positioning of your party's brand. It's never been the case. There's anyone who stood on a party label in 100 years that isn't the case for. But as we said earlier on, the wonderful thing about the elected mayor job is there's lots of evidence across the country. I mean, look at Ben Houchen's wonderful success electorally, surpassing anything that could possibly have been expected from a Conservative in the Tees Valley. So it is possible for the electorate to see the individual performance in these roles. And so I personally hope that next May, whatever the positioning of the Conservative brand, that people will say, what sort of job's Andy done?
So finally then, what's your prediction for the general election?
Oh, it's all to play for. That's going to sound glib, so just let me explain. Of course, the bookies are right, aren't they, at the moment? It doesn't lie that the likelihood, if you take the current polls, is that Keir Starmer will convert his current poll lead into a win. However, there's 18 months to go. And the lesson of history is that the hell of a lot can change in 18 months. And the reason that I believe that my party will come through is that it's got a clear plan for delivery. It understands what the priorities are for the country. And there is no evidence at all that the country has fallen in love with the Labour opposition. Very clear. The deal has not been signed. And the evidence of that is so obvious from the results in the West Midlands.
Thank you very much, Andy. If you enjoyed this podcast and you want to support The Bunker, please consider backing us on Patreon. Just choose the amount you want to donate and help us keep making new episodes. I'm Hannah Fearn. Thank you for listening.
The Bunker Daily was presented by Hannah Fearn. The group editor was Andrew Harrison, the managing editor was Jacob Jarvis, and the producers were Liam Tate, Kasia Tomaszewicz, and me, Alex Rees. Art direction by James Parrott. Music by Kenny Dickinson. The Bunker is a Podmasters production.
It's a busy world out there. Once you've woken up and got on top of all your WhatsApps, your texts, your emails and your DMs, then you've got another pile of stuff to get through. The news. Honestly, who's got the time? That's where Papercuts, the brand new podcast, comes in. Papercuts is your fast, funny tour of all the best bits of the papers, from the biggest scoops to the weirdest headlines to the definitely not made up showbiz gossip. And it's out every weekday with me, Miranda Sawyer, and a host of guests, including tip-top comedian Marcus Brigstock. Marcus, what's your favourite thing about Papercuts?
It's the puns. It's obviously the puns. I mean, when we go through the papers and you see what creative beauties the people who work, particularly in the tabloids, have come up with. Often I think it's pun first, then story for them. They're like, I've got one. Find a story to match this. But it's a really fun part of the podcast to see what they've come up with every day.
Especially the Daily Star.
Oh, the Star. Proud to love animals.
So if you want to be on top of the news and have a laugh while you're doing it, get Papercuts every day on your favourite podcast app. We're out around lunchtime, Monday to Friday. Perfect for a bit of me time in the middle of a busy day. That's Papercuts. We read the papers so you don't have to. Thank you.